भगवद्गीता 6.6 बन्धुरात्मात्मनस्तस्य येनात्मैवात्मनाजितः अनात्मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे वर्तेतात्मैव शत्रुवात्। सो बन्धुर आत्मात्मनस्तस्य बन्धुर बन्धु इज द फ्रेंड आत्मात्मनस्तस्य फॉर द आत्मा द मना इज द फ्रेंड बन्धुरात्मात्मनस्तस्य येनात्मैवात्मनाजितः येन फॉर दैट पर्सन आत्मैव आत्मैवात्मनाजितः बाय हूम द माइंड इज कॉन्कर्ड। अनात्मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे अनात्मनस् इफ वन इज नॉट एबल टू कंट्रोल bring it under control to shatrutve then enmity the mind will stay situated with enmity vartet atmaiva shatruvat anatmanas means not in the control of oneself to shatrutve then in the position of enmity vartet it will stay atma shatruva atmaiva shatruvat atma shatru the enemy of the soul so in this verse krishna differentiates clearly between the atma and the mana so in the previous verse krishna has used the word atma to refer to both the atma and the mana and sometimes some commentators translate that verse as elevate the self with the self and don't degrade the self with the self for the self is the friend of the self and the self is also the enemy of the self So, this verse, this particular translation, although it has been done by some acharyas also, but it is very ambiguous. And interpreting the one atma as the mind not only helps us to more easily make sense of that verse, but it is also consistent with the overall theme of this section. Because the theme of the mind is mentioned clearly in this verse and these two have a clear continuity of thought. So, from that we can easily understand that the mind is what is being referred to in the previous verse also in 6.5. And further, the theme of the mind is continued in the next verse also. Jitatmanah prashantasya So now, there we'll discuss that verse when we come to it. The idea of conquering the soul doesn't make any sense. The soul doesn't conquer the soul. So there Atmana has jit Atmana. It has to clearly refer to the mind itself. So anyway, the point is that without going into semantics too much, that this verse unambiguously uses the word Manaha. And it uses it so that the overall theme of the section becomes clear. And whatever ambiguity might be caused because of the use of the word Atma for both mind and soul is resolved in this verse. Now, let's look at what this verse says. So, Bandhuratmaatmanastasya yenatmaivatmanajitaha bandhur. So, that person is the... For that person, the mind is the friend. Atmat manastasya. For tasya whom? Bandhuratmat manastasya. Yena atmaivat manajitaha. Yena atma. By whom the mind is conquered. So, or one is controlled. At the very least. So, here Krishna is stating that one who controls the mind, for him the mind becomes the friend. And now, what does it mean, literally? Normally, we don't talk about something like controlling a friend, isn't it? Now, we cooperate with a friend, we assist a friend, and sometimes the friend assists us. Essentially, we have a cooperative relationship with a friend. If somebody says that, oh, I control my friend, then we may wonder, okay, what kind of friendship is that? yes, there is control when there is love also. But then that is not exactly, we don't really call it control. At least not in a friendly relationship. Parents may say, I have control over my child. If I tell him to do this, he will do it. But generally, we don't talk about control when we talk about friends. And interestingly, Krishna is not talking about controlling a friend. Krishna is talking about controlling to make it a friend. Which is even more intriguing. Because normally, after we control someone, does that person become a friend? Say somebody's enemy. If you're saying that the person is becoming a friend, that means normally the person was not earlier a friend. And we look at the second part of the verse where it talks about enemy. Varteta. It will stay as enemy. That means that the mind is an enemy. And normally, after controlling something, does it become a friend? So for example, if India has Pakistan as an enemy, so after India controls Pakistan, will Pakistan become a friend? Normally, if a foe is controlled, that foe resents the control and always tries to get back at the controller. And thereby wreak havoc, cause misery to the controller. One was, how dare you try to control me? But here Krishna is saying, after you control, that person will become a friend. So now the example for this, rather than looking at literally at two enemies, we can look at the example of, say, how a man breaks and trains a horse. Initially, when a horse is new because it's young and has not yet been trained to be ridden, or it is new because it has just been captured from the forest, the horse doesn't want to submit to somebody riding on its back. And because of that, the horse knees and tries to use its hooves to attack, and especially it tries to throw off the rider. So at that time, the trainer, now if the person who is ultimately going to use the horse, if that person is not very expert, then that person sometimes hires a trainer. They are often called colliers, who are expert at handling horses. And they are called to, the technical word is used to break the horse. To break the horse doesn't mean literally break its bones, and then it will become useless for riding. But break the horse means break its obstinacy, break its stubbornness. So there is quite a systematic process, and there is a combination of love and discipline by which the horse is broken. Now, some trainers who really love horses, they may not even use the word breaking horses. But essentially, the horse stubbornness and reluctance or recalcitrance, more precisely, reluctance is just unwillingness. Recalcitrance is stubborn opposition. So the horse's recalcitrance is slowly, steadily, determinedly decreased by the by the horse trainer. And slowly, surely, as the horse gets more and more connected with the trainer, then that same horse, which would have earlier violently mauled or thrown off any person who approached it, that horse then just gently neighs and welcomes whoever wants to come and sit over there on it. So this transformation happens because their horse has been controlled. As a result, its horse has been broken. So like that, we shouldn't see the relationship between us and the mind as inherently or incorrigibly adversarial. inherently means that that is intrinsic feature of nature itself. And incorrigibly means that feature cannot be changed at all. No. We have to have, yes, there is a adversarial mode that is there, but that has to be overcome. And the way to overcome is not just by brute force, you know. If a horse or trainer just uses brute force and starts beating the horse every time, that is not the, sometimes that sort of beating is required, but beating is not the main thing. The main thing is reorienting the horse. So similarly, we need to reorient the mind by training it. And this training centers on making the mind do what we want it to do. That is matter from the spiritual perspective, from the scriptural perspective. And not letting the mind do what it wants to do. So the horse just wants to go here and there, but the horse trainer says, go here. So like that, we force the horse of the mind to go in a particular direction where we want it to go, and not, we don't let it go in other directions. So the best direction in which we can let the mind go is Krishna, because Krishna is all attractive and Krishna is omnipotent. And contact with Krishna helps us bring the mind under control much faster than would be the case if we try to control the mind by any other means. So by thus striving to keep the mind, to not let the mind go in undesirable directions. So in this way, we control the mind. And just as the horse eventually may become such a good friend of its master that if in a war field master gets wounded and is in danger, then the horse, there have been many times faithful horses have been known to just run rapidly while the master holds on to its back and the horse takes the master clear of the danger. So earlier the same horse which have caused the danger to the master by knocking down the master and maybe by trampling, by mauling it with its hard hooves, that same horse saves the master. So like that, the mind which gives us so much trouble, but if we expose it to Krishna repeatedly, and by exposing it to Krishna, we purify it so that it becomes attracted to Krishna, then that mind becomes our well-wisher. And then when we are in danger, so rather than we being in a, presently how it happens is we are in a safe devotional situation and suddenly the mind reminds us of sensual temptations and we go into temptations and we fall down. Thus we go into danger zone from where we are in a safe zone. That is what the impure mind does. But when the mind has become purified, then even when we are in a temptation zone, the mind reminds us, hey, this is not what your life is meant for. You have enjoyed these pleasures so many times, and there's no real pleasure in this. Just go and take shelter of Krishna. And then, in this way, the mind takes us out of danger zone into a safe zone. And thus, the mind delivers us. So, Krishna is saying that we strive to control the mind, and by striving to control the mind, we can make it our friend. And thus, the mind can assist us. That means we can use the mind to think of Krishna. And by thinking about Krishna, by thinking about how best to serve Krishna, we can move onwards in our spiritual journey to Him and to attain everlasting happiness thereby. When we attain Him. Thank you.